Welcome to the Dream Huge Podcast, where we'll talk with real estate investors, entrepreneurs, business leaders, athletes, and more to inspire you with their success stories so you can work hard, never give up, and dream huge. And now, let's start the show.
Yo, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Dream Huge Podcast, hosted by JP, John Pavlansky, JP for three. Basketball season is back, baby. You can catch JP on the hardwood when he's not selling real estate, having record monster months, month after month after month. Call JP, John Pavlansky, for all your real estate needs. What's up, JP?
What's going on, my man? I'm excited to talk some real estate today. And yeah, as Pete said, hoops are back, baby. NBA's back, and every Wednesday I'm in the gym 7 to 9. So 7 to 9 on Wednesdays, I'm unavailable, guys. It's my hoop time, cardio time, baby.
Go. So, love it. Got to have
excited
it.
Excited for this guest. Pete, how are you doing today, my man?
I'm excellent, as always, man. Having fun, loving this business of real estate. We're passionate about it. We're obsessed with real estate. We love talking real estate. That's what the podcast is all about, you know, talking to movers, shakers, influencers, real estate investors, huge dreamers all over the world. So we have Adrian Castaneda with us today. How you doing, Adrian?
I'm doing good, Pete. How's it going, John? Nice to see you guys again. It was good meeting you guys this week, and I'm excited for this opportunity.
Yeah, man. Thanks for
doing
coming
well,
on.
Man. Excited to talk some real estate.
JP introduced me to Adrian, and Adrian is a real estate investor originally out of California, now lives in the Columbus area, and we actually met up. He's looking to do some investing in Mansfield. So we thought we'd bring him on the podcast, and he's a creative real estate investor guy as well. So hopefully he can share some stories with us. So Adrian, tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do.
Well, thank you. Obviously, my name is Adrian. I'm from Los Angeles, California area, specifically Pomona, California. I grew up there, graduated high school there in 2006. I joined the military straight out of high school and shipped off to the Army. And ever since, I've been stationed in Fort Hood, Texas. I went to Iraq. I went to California in the Army Reserves, and I moved around to the Bay Area, and then now I'm here in Columbus. So,
excellent. Salute. Thanks for your service,
sir. That's been my journey so far since high school.
So how many years have you been in?
I've been in since 2006, so that's close to like 17 years, I believe, if my math is correct, around there.
Is 20 the magic number?
Yeah, it flew by quickly.
Yeah.
20 is a magic number. This time flew by, and I'm ready to replace my income with passive income.
Absolutely. So, Adrian, what kind of real estate investing have you started on? I know you've told me and Pete when we had lunch earlier this week, but what things have you started on? Where did you first invest at? Where do you have properties? How has this journey progressed for you? And tell us a little bit about that and tell us where you are now in the real estate investing world.
So my real estate journey started back in 2008, and it was almost accidental because one of the benefits of me joining the military and being active duty at the time was be able to use the VA loan. And obviously that provides a 0% down payment. And I remember my dad always telling me, whatever you do, just always buy real estate. And that just stuck with me. So right before a deployment in 2008 to Iraq, I bought a duplex in Harker Heights, Texas, which I still currently own. I bought that for about $108,000 back then. And right now it's worth about $256,000. Mm-hmm. So that was my first multifamily home. And then from there, I made it a point that every time I would PCS, which is a permanent change of station where you relocate to a different duty location, I didn't want to pay rent. I had this in my mind that I wanted to pay my own house off and then move again and have somebody else pay my mortgage off and just rinse and repeat. I didn't know I was actually investing in real estate until I bought like my third or fourth home. And I saw how these letters kept coming in from the bank saying, hey, do you want to refinance your house? You have some equity, blah, 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 blah. At this time, I was only like 20, 24. So I didn't really comprehend what equity was or none of that stuff, right? So then luckily, after the market crash in 2008, 2009, around there, I bought a house in California, in Rialto, California. I bought it for $155,000. And just last year, it appraised for about $600,000.
Woo!
Yeah.
So how did you choose that, so, that house and then, in California? My mom bought,
well, I got out active duty, and then I went to the reserves. I went to college, and my mom lives in Southern California, so I wanted to be close to her. And my wife's family lives in Southern California, so I wanted to be in the area. Nobody knew what was going to happen after that market crash, right? So everything was cheap. This house was actually a foreclosure, and I bought it straight from the bank. I did what was called a double end. So I got the agent who was listing the house. I called him directly, and I said, hey, I want to make you an offer. And he said he had about 40 offers at the time, but I was the only smart one to use that same agent as the dual agent. So that's why he went with me, because he got his full 6% commission on the real estate fee. So for those that don't know, that's one of my hacks. I like to use a dual agency. I know it's not allowed in all states, but it's something that I keep under my belt here.
That's a great tip. So as an investor, because I tell my residential buyers, I'm like, you know, it's not always in your best interest to use that listing agent, because they have that relationship with the seller. But as an investor, you're getting an advantage, because you know that you have the better offer for the listing agent, because he's getting a full 6% commission. So he's going to push harder for you as a buyer. Plus, he's able to, as long as the seller allows it, able to tell you what number you need to get to.
Exactly. And it's just very clear cut. No, you know, no nonsense. Just straight up, hey, this is the magic number. Make it happen. And let's keep it moving. So then after that, I helped my mom purchase her home. And then I moved to Ohio. And I bought my primary home here. But all of that time, I was using my social security number with the DTI. So that's when I understood what DTI was, debt to income ratio, for those that don't know. But I was looking at everybody else, and I'm like, there has to be another way to purchase homes. You can't just be buying with your personal name. I hated like giving the banks 2 years worth of statements and employer letters and W-2s and rental income from my other assets. And then I met somebody by the name of Charles Fitch here in the Columbus area. He's a big-time investor here in the Columbus area. And he was helping me purchase an investment home after I bought my primary home here in Columbus. And for some reason, I asked him, hey, how many units do you have? He told me he had about 30 at the time. And I thought I was doing good with like 4 or 5 at the time. So I said, hey, Charles, I don't know how you're doing it, but I want to be where you're at. Like, how do I get from point A to point B? Can you show me the way? And long story short, he did. And because of that, I'm currently sitting at 13 units right now. And part of that scaling process was I was able to use my business EIN to use DSCR loans and do the BRRRR to rent, refinance, repeat. And that same money, I just keep deploying it over and over and over and over again. But I got started by cashing out on my California properties and my Texas properties.
Whoa, love this, Adrian. But for the listeners, break down DSCR loan. What is a DSCR loan, and how did that help you scale so quickly?
So the DSCR loan is a debt service coverage ratio loan, and lenders don't care about your employment or your job history or none of that. They only care about the asset itself, and if the asset is going to make money or not. So if you could prove to a bank that your asset that you want to invest in will make a certain percentage that they got to meet, they're willing to take a risk on you and give you the money to fund the deal. They could fund the purchase acquisition cost of the deal and up to like 90% of the rehab cost. It just all depends. And you just make like a small down payment. And then everything else is just like they refund your money when you ask for it withdrawals and inspections and stuff. So it's just another way to scale, like multiply.
The lender is underwriting the property income sometimes, as opposed to your own personal income. I love that about DSCR loans.
Correct, 100%.
And also, I want to jump back one more step to another thing you mentioned. I want to reiterate this and repeat this. Everyone in the military that has VA purchasing ability should do exactly what you did. Should be the very first step that if you can purchase with a VA loan, you absolutely must house hack. Buy a 2-4 unit with a VA loan. You have zero down, live in one unit, and that is how your investing career begins. That is the best. And nobody teaches us that.
Exactly. You know,
we think, okay, let's go buy a big house and grab a whole bunch of debt and go in debt and buy a bunch of furniture and buy a big fancy car. And that's the backwards way to do it. You did it exactly right on step one, and everyone should do it the exact same way.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because there's not a lot of financial literacy in the military. So what I do, I envision one day that I'll write a book called The Military Millionaire. And I'll talk about that same process where if somebody serves 20 years, there's a good possibility that they could PCS five times. So that means that they should be able to buy five properties if they PCS at a minimum. And if they do that after the 20 years, at least three of those properties should be cash flowing enough to replace their retirement that they're aiming for. So like right now, I'm in the legacy retirement system, and that's like 50% of my base pay. And that should be like around, let's just call it $2,000. If you buy a house as soon as you join, and then by the year 20 mark, you're making more on your house hacking and all that stuff than you are your retirement pension plan. The pension plan recently just changed, but what I'm trying to get at is that use the government's money that you're getting for housing to scale your portfolio and live passively through real estate. And there's no reason why they can't do it, because they have a 0% down payment. They're already getting money from the government, which is called a basic allowance for housing. And they could just deploy that to their own mortgage. If it were me, I would get a 4-unit, live in one, rent the other room in that same unit, and then rent out the other 3 units. That way you're living for free, in a sense.
Is it too late for me to join? Is it too late for me to join the military? I'm 45 years old. I'm pretty sure I can still pass the physical.
I don't know, but that's good. I just know that those 0% down payments are sweet, and every veteran, every active duty person needs to use them at whatever cost possible. By any means.
And like you said, it's so unknown. The literacy for it, the knowledge, the education on it is so minimal that most people don't even know this. I cannot wait for this podcast to drop so I can send it to all my military buddies. I've got multiple very, very good friends who are in the military, and I talk to them about real estate investing all the time because it's a great opportunity for them. You know, they have the housing. They have so many opportunities and so many resources being in the military that you did it the perfect way. I'm impressed. I'm super impressed.
One thing I do want to mention is that the saddest thing I've seen – go ahead.
Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
One of the things I wanted to mention is the saddest thing that I've seen is people who are about to retire after 20 years and have nothing to show for it besides just their pension plan and maybe some disability. I've helped at least 12 soldiers that I could think of buy their first home, even though it was late in their career, but they were still able to buy their own home. And a lot of them don't think they could buy their house, but a lot of it is just getting pre-qualified, and they're scared of, they feel like they got to know every single step, but all you got to do is the next step. So these guys that I met with 15 years in, 10 years in, I convinced them, like, hey, you got to buy a house. And I started to explain to them why. I talked about equity, monthly cash flow, the tax benefits, and the mortgage pay down. And if they were to PCS, they're worried about, oh, I don't want to rent my house, or it's going to be a hassle, et cetera, et cetera. But you got to see this long term. And that's where I've been able to reap those benefits.
Here's the other great thing about this method. You know, the military has already scouted out the cities for you. You're investing in cities that have military bases in them. So you're not, that's making it even easier for, I mean, right. Yes, you still have to go and find the deal. Yeah, you're still finding off-market deals and whatnot. But the actual city that you're choosing is solid. And that makes it a little bit easier. Yep. So I love that.
That's correct.
So, Adrian, you bought your first place in 2006, correct? You said you bought your first duplex?
2008. I joined in 2006, but I bought in 2008.
2008.
Mm-hmm.
And you're up to 13 units right now. What is next for you? So you've built this portfolio the last 15 years or so. What is next? What's the next step for you?
So I've been hearing I follow the Bigger Pockets podcast, and I follow like Pace Morby, David Green, and a lot of those gurus there. And I've heard him talk about subject to and owner finance, seller finance. And at first I was like, what is all that? You know, like everybody knows how to buy a house, and it's just going to the bank. The bank tells you what you're qualified for, and that's it. But there's multiple ways on acquiring a property that doesn't even require a bank approval. So my next step is to do a subject to and a seller finance. And it's funny that you asked me that, because right now I'm in contract for a seller finance and a subject to deal. And a lot of it just started with hearing the podcast and reading the books from Pace Morby and David Green. And then and obviously Rich Dad Poor Dad also kind of inspired me to go to bet on myself. That was the best thing, to just bet on yourself. And where I was going with this is that if I'm able to crack the code on getting subject twos and seller finance, we're just going to explode here in Columbus, Ohio. And as you guys know, I also am interested in doing the new builds with you guys there in Mansfield. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the ceiling is limitless. Like we could do a lot of great things, especially if we get creative with the financing with these high rates. Those are good avenues of approach to buy houses from people that are in pain. And what I mean by pain is like they had a death in the family, a divorce, or they got to move out of town as soon as possible, like stuff like that. As investors, it's sad to say, but you got to capitalize on those opportunities and make the deal happen.
Well, and it's a matter of fact of just helping someone out in need. It's solving someone's real estate problem is what it is. Adrian, if you wouldn't mind, break us mm-hmm. down the nuts and bolts of your seller finance deal. What does that look like? And your sub two deal for the listeners who may not quite understand how those are structured.
Okay, so for the seller finance, I'll just use ballpark numbers. But I had a local investor that bought a house like 5 years ago. He bought it. It was messed up. It's totally ugly. He bought it for around like 50K or whatever it was. He started the rehab, and he just doesn't want to finish it anymore. He wants to move on to bigger projects. And he had already finished all the rough plumbing, electrical, HVAC, and all the other stuff. So it's just a matter of me coming in and closing it out. But anyways, where I'm going with this is that I think that house, if we make it a 2-2 in the Hungarian Village in Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, I think it could ARV for 225. What I mean by ARV is the after repair value. Or if you have a hard time understanding that, is what I think I could sell the house for at the end. So what he wanted was $125,000, right? But I said, hey, I don't have $125,000. However, I want you to seller finance this to me. The gentleman who owns the house owns the house free and clear. He doesn't have any mortgage against it, etc. So he wanted $125,000, and I said, hey, look, so I'll finish the project off for you. I already have my contractor who bid the job, which is Brian, the gentleman you guys met with me. He bid the job for 30K, and that's what it's going to take for us to finish. So to summarize everything I'm saying, I offered $115,000 for him to seller finance me. So in other words, I'm going to get the deed from the house, and the seller is going to have a lien against me now, because I have the deed, or the receipt, the deed, and there's going to be a first lien position with him saying that I owe him $115,000. I also gave him $5,000. I will give him $5,000 down when we close as a good faith. So overall, he's getting $120,000 right there up front, right? But since he wanted to be at $125,000, I said, I'll give you 5 monthly interest payments of $1,000 so we could get you to that $125,000 that he wants. So with the owner finance, the down payment, and the interest, he should get $125,000. My exit plan is either to burr or to sell. If I'm able to hit my 225 ARV, right, I would get 75% of that back if I burr. And let's just see, 225 times 0.75, I should be able to get $168,750 back to me.
And then what do you do with that for the listener?
So with that, I gotta pay for the rehab cost, which was $30,000 for Brian, and then the original $125,000 that I owe the seller, to clear off the mortgage note that he has against me. So that should be if I burr out.
Do you have a balloon in place?
Yes, an agreement in place.
Balloon.
Yes, a balloon. Yes, a balloon. A balloon. So I'll either balloon pay him once I refinance out, or flip the house and sell it to him.
And what is your balloon?
Not sell it to him, but like just clear the lien.
So what is your balloon period? Is it 5 years?
The balloon
years?
Payment would be for 100. No, it's going to be 12 months.
12 months. Excellent.
So my contractor told me that the job should take about 3 to 4 months. With contractors, you got to give extra time. It's just, if you've been in the game, you already know. Contractors are good people. They mean well, but if they have another opportunity, they're going to take that opportunity too. So you got to give extra time. So I'm giving myself 5 months for the project to finish with a bottom of 3 and a high of 5. But I told the seller, if I don't pay you, if it takes me longer than 5 months, you continue to get $1,000 in interest from me. So there's an opportunity for you to make more money. But I will balloon pay him out with the refi or the sale of the purchase and pay off the lien of $115,000. Mm-hmm. And then I own the property free and clear. If I burr out, I should get $13,750 tax-free to me, because a refinance is not income. It's a debt, right? Yeah. And if I was to flip it, let's see, 225 times 0.92. I use 0.92 because I account for 6% of agent fees and 2% of closing costs. So if I'm all in at 165, I should be able to flip this house for about $42,000.
Love it. Love it.
My plan is to always keep rentals. So it just depends on, if I could burr out and make some money, I'll do that. But it, depending on the market and the interest rate, I might just flip it and do a 1031 tax exchange and do something better with that money.
So if I'm a listener right now, I'm saying, he just told me that he's going to spend $5,000 as a down payment.
Mm-hmm.
$1,000 a month for 12 months, if it takes that long, but $5,000 down payment, right, to get a house and make possibly around $40,000 on the flip side, plus some money tax-free, or burr it out, get tax-free money, and have a rental property for under $10,000.
Yeah, essentially, yes.
It's a win-win. You know, seller financing is a win-win. It's a win for the seller, because he's getting a project finished. You're solving a real estate problem for him. He's getting interest-only payments. He's getting more money than he would just selling on the open market. And it's a win for you, because you don't have to go to the bank. And you're able to buy something with very little money down. Yep. Okay, tell us about the sub two.
Right. So the sub two, there's this property that I'm eyeing in Hocking Hills. We're in deep negotiations, just a matter of agreeing to a number. The motivation for the seller, and that's the key. If you guys are going to invest, you need to find a motivation or the problem that the seller has and come up with a solution, like Pete was saying earlier. So this property in the Hocking Hills is it's a current Airbnb, and it's cash flowing $500 to $1,000 a month positively right now after all expenses. What we're trying to do is I'm trying to purchase their house subject to their current mortgage. So in other words, I just want to take over payments. That's it. The fear in that is that some banks have a due on sale clause and some don't. So there's ways, I don't want to get too deep into it, but there's ways to defeat the due on sale clause or get creative with it. And for more of a reasoning and explanation on that, I suggest you guys follow Pace Morby on the Bigger Pockets podcast, and he'll break it down A through Z, every single step. But long story short, I just want to take over payments. And give them, they want $50,000 down, but I want to be able to pay them the $50,000 creatively. So I could give them $10,000 right now, for example, and then for the next 4 years, give them $10,000 at the every annuity period. That way they still get their $50,000. And I'm able to also lock in their equity that they think they have. So the benefits of the subject two is that you're able to offer the seller more money for their house versus a traditional sell. If they were to sell their house at 515, they owe the bank like $412,000. So they would only be cashing out about $60,000 in profit after all real estate agent fees and closing costs. With me, they still get their 515 that they're asking for, but they'll just get it out spread out through time. And also that helps them qualify for their new house that they're trying to buy and all the other stuff. Because they're using their DTI for that purchase they're trying to make.
And again, it's a win-win. It's a win-win for you. You get in at a very low cost. I mean, relatively, a $515,000 house, and you're saying you're putting $50,000 down and taking over payments. That's a very low cost to get into that house and to get in that rental property. And you're helping solve a problem for them. You're getting them to their next step. It's amazing.
For sure.
Did you have an attorney draw up the sub two paperwork, or are you using Pace Morby's templates, or what are you using?
So me, I know that I'm not the expert at that. So I went to the Pace Morby free page that he has on Facebook. You can join it for free. And in there, you could ask questions like, hey, who knows of a title company that does subject to or specializes in subject to? So I found a company here in Columbus called Axis Title, and they do subject to's for days. They know it inside out. They know the system. And it goes back to what I was saying. You don't have to know every step. You just got to know the next step. So I just tell them, hey, this is what we're trying to do. Solve that issue, make it happen. And that's what they specialize in, and that's what they'll do.
Awesome stuff. Okay, so to recap for the listeners and the viewers, if you're looking to get creative, you know, you've got seller finance. If the property owner owns the property free and clear, you can use seller finance as a weapon.
Yep.
If the property has a mortgage on it and they may be underwater or close to being underwater, you can offer that subject too. And that is how you solve two real estate problems. And another thing we didn't touch on, another benefit for the sellers on the seller finance deal is that it helps them ease their tax burden by selling seller finance. They don't have as big of a capital gains right up front. They can defer that out over time. So that's another advantage when offering a seller finance deal.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a lot to learn, but the way I started my baseline and the foundation was reading the books from Pace Morby and the Bigger Pockets books that they have out there. You want to have a good foundation. And then and with social media now, you could ask any question. There's somebody willing to help you because they were at your shoes at one point. Everybody started from the beginning. There was nobody that was born with all this knowledge. They had to learn through trial and error. And you can't let that scare you to not be the best version of yourself, you know?
Absolutely, man. I've heard you mention finding mentors, and that's what you just said again. Yeah. How important for the listeners out there? How important? I know it because this guy right here on the other side of you, Adrian, has been massive mentor to me. Okay,
right.
How important is it to have good mentors around you that have done the things you're looking to do?
So, John, this is how I look at it. At first, I was very stubborn, and I was trying to figure it out on my own, and read all these books and read all these podcasts and all this stuff. But you know what's that doing? It's wasting time. And you're wasting opportunities. You're wasting deals. And everything's going bypass you. But when hiring or working with a mentor, you're getting the expressway to your financial freedom. So like think about it. If you go to Disneyland, you can wait in the 3-hour line if you want. Or you can get that fast pass to where you want to be. And the way to do that is you got to bring value to the table. You can't just say, hey, teach me or let me take you out to lunch and teach me. Nobody's going to do that. You got to bring some sort of value to the person that you're working with. That way you're an asset to them. And if you do that, they're willing to share everything and anything they know. And that's the secret to that. You got to get the fast pass.
Absolutely. Got to get the fast pass. I love that quote. I love that quote. Got to get the fast pass. No, so with that being said too, dive in just because I have kids all the time reach out to me about real estate and real estate investing. And obviously you can't mentor every of them. You can't mentor all of them. You can't show them all the way. But the ones that actually get it and actually want it, those are the ones that I put my time into as a mentor as well. So what kind of value are mentors looking for? What kind of value did you add to your mentors that made them want to work with you?
So my mentor now, I was one of the few that started when he first started the program. Like his coaching mentorship program. I was one of the few, but I was the most aggressive. And I wasn't afraid to ask any question about real estate. Like I asked him, hey, I might have asked some questions that were like silly for him to answer. Like, dude, are you seriously asking me this? But I had to ask to check the block and make sure that I knew that going forward. So what we did is he started expanding and I made a recommendation video, kind of saying what I told you guys now, that at first I was being stubborn. I had a lot of pride. I wanted to learn on my own. I figured it out on my own, but with his mentorship, I was able to just learn from his mistakes. And now I wasn't doing those mistakes because those mistakes cost you a lot of money if you don't know what you're doing. Everybody wants to do real estate until it's time to do real estate, if you know what I mean. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, it's not easy. It's hard. And you will take some losses. You will take a lot of big wins. But what you're trying to do with a mentor is trying to reduce your risk of losing money and be profitable. And by working with him now, I do want to mention today is actually the first day that I'm going to hold my own mentorship calls with my two prospects that I had on. They're military members themselves, and they've been watching me on my social media, posting on my little TikToks and Instagram, trying to catch people's attention. And they know that I raise private money and stuff like that. So tonight I will have my first call with my guys, and I'm pretty much going to hold their hand through the process and make sure that they become investors and eventually replace myself and have them do their own journey and start from there, you know?
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing, man. I'm shooting you a follow right now. I'm hopping on Instagram. I'm shooting you a follow as we speak, man.
Okay.
Me too. Is it Adrian Castaneda?
No, actually, it's in Spanish. I do probably have to change it eventually, but my goal eventually is to also start a Spanish-speaking mentorship community, because there is a lack of knowledge on the Hispanic side for real estate. And my goal is, or dream is, to just start a program for them to be able to expose them to the opportunities that are out there. My Instagram is El Compa Cas, so it's EL_COMPA_CAS. For those that are interested.
My man, I'm shooting you a
follow I'll
follow you right back.
Compa.
COMPA.
Yeah. Another underscore.
Compa in Spanish is like buddy, like friend, like in Mexico specifically.
Okay.
So,
and what's after the
compa? Reason why I didn't want to get all fancy is because, what's that?
Sorry, I think Pete's a bit behind us.
Gotcha. El Compa Cas.
What'd you say, Pete?
Yeah, El Compa Cas. I haven't made it like formal or professional like these other investors that you see online. And the reason why is because I'm an open book. I'm transparent. I'm going to tell you my losses just like I'm going to tell you my wins. I have nothing to hide. I'm an open book. And if anybody ever wants to hit me up and ask any questions about real estate, I'll tell you how it is. I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. I'm just going to tell you my experiences. And that's all I can speak on, you know?
Absolutely.
So I'm a friend to everybody, whoever wants to be, you know, wants to get connected.
I love it, man. And Adrian, I can tell, man. I can tell you're going to do terrific things. I'm going to keep my lookout. I'm going to keep the lookout out for that book for a long time, man, because I'm excited about The Military Millionaire. I'm excited about you being able to open doors for more people, and you can tell how passionate you are about it, man. And that's what it is. We're the same way, man. We're passionate about real estate. We're obsessed with real estate. And we understand the wealth and the power of real estate investing that it can provide to you. So, man, thank you so much for hopping on and talking with us about everything. I do want to ask you another question, though.
Yeah, anything you want.
So I know you've mentioned reading books. You've mentioned some podcasts you listen to. If you could give three books for any real estate investor, any brand new real estate investor to read, what would the three books be?
Well, obviously, the first one has to be Rich Dad Poor Dad. That's absolutely, like, not even a question. The second one is, there's actually a book, I think it's called, I'm trying to look it up right now, but something with Babylon. I read it a couple of times.
The Richest Man in Babylon.
Yes. For those that lack any financial literacy whatsoever, that book will at least give you a foundation of how to start. You don't need to be rich, but one of those things that I caught from that was you got to save at least, I believe he says 10% no matter what of your income, mm-hmm. 10% of your gold. You have to save that. And then the third book that I would probably recommend is the David Green book that he has on the Bigger Podcast. I'm trying to get it right now.
He's got about 20 at this point, I think.
I know. But all his books are good, but the Burr book. I don't think it's David Green, it's the other guy. J. Scott, I think, is the author of that book.
Okay. Or Brandon Turner, maybe even.
Yeah, or Brandon Turner, probably. Yeah, I mix them up all the time, and I follow all these guys. But those are the three books for sure. Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Richest Man in Babylon, and the Burr book. Just to, the Burr book is probably a little bit more advanced for people that have like a few houses already, and they think that all they have to do is save money up front and then redeploy it. So that would probably kind of open some ideas there with the Bird Book. Mm-hmm. But those three for sure are the ones that catapulted my mindset and how I think about things. And also, one thing I do want to mention, if I have an opportunity, is I bought the game called Cashflow from the Rich Dad Poor Dad series. Mm-hmm. And I play that with my kids. And I think if I would have learned that when I was a kid or a teenager, I would have been, I don't know, probably, I don't know what I would have been right now. You know what I mean? I just learned about financial literacy at a 25, 26 is when I really started to understand it. So if you guys, for Christmas presents, I'm not making no money out of saying this, but if you guys could buy that game Cashflow and start with your kids young and teach them about finances and how to read a income statement, you're going to do wonders for them and help them out dramatically for their future.
One more time, your Instagram for folks to follow.
It's EL_COMPA_CAS. El Compa Cas.
El Compa Cas, baby. Love it. Love it. Adrian Castaneda, thank you for joining us today, sir. John Pavlansky, JP Fothery, thank you for joining us, buddy. Hey, you're super busy. I know I need to let you go as well. Appreciate your time very much as well, sir. And thank you everyone for listening and watching the Dream Huge podcast. Make sure to like, subscribe, and share. And as always, remember the rules: work hard, never give up, and dream huge. Let's see the guns, Adrian. Put them up, put them up, put them up.
Woo!
Thank you for listening to the Dream Huge podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. For more inspiring content, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Dream Huge Realty. And on TikTok at Dream Huge Inc. Until next time.